welcome to this week's episode of Fun of the Run podcast. I'm your host, Michelle, also known as Waddell Running Lady, and I feel like I'm getting ready to sneeze. Okay, maybe I'll be okay. Thank you so much for being here this week again to listen to me ramble on about running. I appreciate your support week after week. If you're new here, welcome. Fun of the Run is all about just your average runner. You know, you don't have to be somebody that loves to run really far. You don't have to be somebody that runs really long. You don't have to be a seasoned runner. All you have to do is love running. Or maybe you don't even have to love running to listen to this podcast. Maybe you're just interested in running, or maybe you know somebody that runs and you want to hear what it's all about. Well, Fun of the Run podcast is for everybody that has any interest whatsoever in running. This podcast is for you. I give tips. I give tricks. Sometimes I just tell dumb stories. I share my experiences. I do race recaps. Every once in a while, I get the privilege of interviewing somebody. And it's just kind of a little bit of everything. But whether you've been here for every episode or whether today is your first one, I just want to say welcome and thank you so much for being here. As a quick reminder, you can always reach out to me on Instagram through direct messaging. That is Waddell Running Lady. I also have an email, funoftherunpodcast@gmail.com, and that is strictly for the podcast, and I'm the only one that has access to that, so I can see all your messages myself and reply. So reach out anytime, share your feedback about the show, or offer suggestions, whatever, criticism, comments, funny things, tell me your stories. I love it all. So go ahead. Well, I don't love the criticism, so I don't want to lie, but I love all the other good stuff. So thank you again for that. Today I wanted to share, let's say, kind of a smorgasbord of ideas and things. This episode is going to kind of be like another mishmash. We've done a few of these episodes in the past where I kind of have several things on my mind that I want to talk about with you. And today's going to be like that again. I even have a section of the podcast, which sounds really ridiculous, but doesn't have anything actually to do with running, but just a few stories that I want to tell you guys. So hopefully you'll stick around for that. And we're going to get started, though. I'm going to tell you about Lake Martin 50, which is coming up this Saturday. So let's go ahead and get started with this show. I signed up for Lake Martin 50 Miler several months ago, and it is almost here. Anyhow, the race is this Saturday. So today's Monday. 5 days from now, I will be, Lord willing, and if the creek don't rise, standing on the start line of my very first ever in my life 50-mile race. And Thursday, I'll be flying out. So I wanted to get there a couple of days early so I could kind of just settle in a little bit, you know, maybe get used to, you know, time being a little bit different. Arizona, we don't have daylight savings time, so I know heading back there, it's going to be a different time, and just time adjustment is different anyways. And so I just wanted to get there early. I want to get all my ducks in a row, get all my gear packed, get my drop bags ready, and not have to just like fly in the night before and stress. So that is the plan. I had a major mindset shift a couple of days ago in regards to this race. Now, I know you guys are probably so sick of hearing about this race. You're probably like, Michelle, we cannot wait until this race is over because it's all you've talked about for months. So please, God, let this race be done and please help her to finish or else we'll have to hear about it for another 2 years. So I will try to make this the last time I talk about Lake Martin, except for my race recap, okay? Because you know there's going to be a race recap, right? Okay. Just to make sure we're all on the same page with that. So the mindset shift happened a couple of days ago. And here's the deal. I was really nervous. I was really stressed out about this race. Like I said, I've shared some of this in a couple of previous episodes. But I kept waking up. Like I would wake up in the morning with like a pit in the bottom of my stomach. I would wake up with a headache. I would wake up just feeling so much stress and anxiety. And I had just slept all night. But as soon as my eyes opened, I was thinking about this race. And everything that could go wrong with it and my luggage getting lost because I have a layover on the way there. And what if, you know, what if something gets lost? And obviously I know bring my race day gear and my carry-on, all that. But still, you know, what if I'm, you know, I get a rental car and I drive to my hotel and somebody breaks into my hotel. Just all of these things were just scaring me. Running with somebody for an entire race is, I don't want to say it's scaring me, but it's definitely not something that I normally do. And so there are uncertainties involved with that. I was getting more nervous and more scared and more worried than really was healthy, you know, I obviously realized that when you care about something so much, you know, I love running long distances. I love running ultra marathons. Lake Martin will be my fourth ultra. I love all of this and I'm invested in it and my heart is in it. And this is one of my dreams that I'm chasing. And so it's normal to be worried in that sense because I care so much and that's not going to go away. But my perspective was just all wrong. And I was just way more, I just was worried about it in an unhealthy way. And so here's what changed. Here's what happened in this May. You all may think, wow, she's really strange. She thinks really weird or morbid. I don't know. But I was scrolling through Instagram the other day, and there's somebody on there that you've probably all heard of, Dave Ramsey. And I just stopped. I don't usually like watch all of his reels or whatever, but this particular one, for whatever reason, I was interested and I listened to it. I watched it. And a young man called in and said that he was paying down his wife's student loans and, you know, they owed $160,000 in student loans and they had gotten $100,000 paid off on it, $60,000 left. She's 26 weeks pregnant with their second child, and she was just diagnosed with stage 4 colon cancer. Does he continue to pay down his student loans? Of course, Dave Ramsey said, what? Absolutely not. You know, no. You know, anyways, in the whole course of the conversation, I just couldn't quit listening. But what struck home to me was this woman is 30 years old, pregnant with her second baby, diagnosed with stage 4 cancer. I don't know what her prognosis is. Her husband didn't know what they hadn't given them necessarily a prognosis yet. I have no idea. But what happened to me immediately when I heard that, I thought, of course, my mom, you know, she died of ovarian cancer at 53. My dad died of pancreatic cancer at 62. I'm 49. And I thought, okay, this woman is getting ready for the biggest fight of her life, literally. Like, we're not talking fighting for your life to get the best deal or something. This is literally fighting for her actual life, cancer. And I thought, okay, I don't have cancer, to my knowledge. I am healthy. I'm 49. Like, I've already lived 19 years longer than this poor woman. And I am sitting here waking up sick to my stomach because of a race. You know, and it just made me feel like, okay, Michelle, come on. Like, you need to get your perspective straight. Of course, there are people suffering. And just because, you know, we talk about the things, well, some people don't have clean water and some people don't have enough food to eat. And we know we can't help every single person. You know what I'm saying? But there is also that part of us, of course, we want to, but there's also that, how can I explain this? Sometimes you know, I don't know about you, but sometimes I feel guilty. Like, I have all of these blessings and I have all of this and someone else is literally fighting for their life. And I guess what happened is immediately, like, the worries, they quit mattering. And I know that sounds so weird because it was such a big deal. And then suddenly, like, that worry was gone. And I just started thinking about how fortunate and how blessed I am that, you know, I'm able to buy a plane ticket. I'm able to pay for a hotel room. I'm able to get a rental car. I have a husband that was able to take work off for a few days to hold things down at home, get the kids to school, pick them up, take them where they need to be so that I can go and travel across the country to chase a dream, you know, to run this race. And I thought, how privileged am I? How blessed am I? And yet I am worried, you know, and I know that, again, it's normal to be worried. It's normal to be concerned. It's normal to be nervous before a big race and all of this. But because I feel like my nerves were so messed up and so shot, and I was so scared and so worried, I needed this kind of reality check to be like, okay, chill out, Michelle, seriously, this is supposed to be something that you enjoy. This is supposed to be fun. And this is not a life or death situation. This is a race that you chose to do. And this is going to be an epic adventure. It's going to be so much fun, and you're going to love it. You know, even if it's hard, you are going to be so stoked when you cross that finish line. And it just gave me a whole new outlook on this race. And so as I sit here Monday, 5 days before my race, I don't even feel scared at this moment. Like, nothing has changed. Like, I'm still flying alone. You know what I mean? I've still got a pack and make sure I don't forget anything. I've still got all the same concerns, so to speak, but that feeling in my gut is gone. That scare, that fear is gone. That I still have a healthy worry and nervousness about going and doing my best. And I want to finish, and I know it's going to be really hard and all of that, but I appreciate that wake up call. I'm so sad for that woman, and I wish that she didn't have to go through what she's going to have to go through. And I, you know, my heart just breaks for her. And I guess I'm trying to use that, I don't know, compassion, I'm not sure, but to have a better perspective of how grateful that I want to be and not forget what a gift it is to be able to do the things that I love to do, because not everybody can do what they want to do, you know? So yeah, so I'm just, tomorrow is going to be packing day, because I will have zero time to pack on Wednesday, and I fly out Thursday morning. So it's exciting times over here, you guys. I'm so thankful for all of your support, for everybody that has reached out to me and said, you know, good luck, you got this, we're so proud of you. All of your words, they just help me so much. And I have so many amazing people in my corner, and I just want to say thank you for that. I'm going to move on to talking about my last weekend experience volunteering at Black Canyon Aid Station during Mesquite Canyon Trail Runs. So Mesquite Canyon Trail Runs happened this year on March 9th, and it was out at the White Tank Mountain Regional Park, which is my backyard. So I run at the White Tanks multiple times a week. So sometimes three times, sometimes four, it just depends. But I'm out there a lot. All of the trails that these races were on, I've been on. And I love the White Tanks. There are some extremely challenging trails out there. There's a lot of technical stuff, a lot of really rocky things. It's a very brutal course. The 50K is brutal. The 50 mile is brutal. The 30K is brutal. The half marathon was brutal. let's just call it like it is. All of the trails aren't brutal, but the courses for these races are very tough. I haven't done the 8K event, but I think those trails are Gray Fox, and I'm not sure what else, but those, some of those courses are really rough. But it was just so fun to get to go out there and see people racing through my backyard. This is where I'm at, you know, all the time. So it was a lot of fun. Obviously, I don't do the really hard trails very often, but where the climbs, you know, Goat Camp is one and Mesquite is the other one. They are very, very, let's say, intense. So I don't do either one of those often, but I have done them in the past. Anyways, the aid station that I was located at, I was there for the morning rush. So it was just a 4-hour shift. And I had the option of getting like a volunteer shirt or an extra $5 race credit. And so I opted for the extra $5 race credit. And I ended up, I think it was like $10 an hour race credit or something like that. And then we were basically where the South Trail is located at the White Tank Regional Park. And this is a trail I run all the time. And so it was really fun to pull up and, hey, Aravaipa's here. You know, it was so cool. And got out and helped. I volunteered with four other people, Luna, Kim and Elliot, and Justin. And Justin and I were just there for the morning rush. So for 4 hours, everybody else was there for the duration of the race. So I believe it was like an 8 or 9 hour shift. And it was just, it was a lot of fun. So some of the responsibilities for our aid station specifically were, we made peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. We made avocado and hummus roll-ups. We made turkey and cheese roll-ups. We cut up watermelon. We cut up little potatoes, little baby potatoes. We cut up pickles. We put out snacks. So I'm just going to tell you some of the offerings that we had. We had trail mix, Oreos, ginger snaps, candied ginger, bananas, oranges, watermelon. We had fruit snacks. We had pretzels. We had Lay's potato. No, I think they're actually Ruffles potato chips. And let's see, we also had a selection of goos and energy chews. And there was just a, we didn't have like a ton of those. We kind of had like a stash that was left over from like, I think maybe from Mountain to Fountain last weekend, maybe. But so we didn't have like a ton of those to where we could really refill. But we did have a selection of those. We offered water and a hydration product called Gnarly that Aravaipa uses at all of their races. And what else did we have? Oh, we also had a little table set up with first aid. So there were Band-Aids and bandages, and there were sunscreen and salt tabs and all kinds of different first aid type things over some kind of, I think squirrel's nut butter was over there. We just had a little table set off to the side that had all kinds of first aid type things over there. And then let's see, I feel like I'm forgetting something. We had a lot of ice. We had a bucket, a couple of buckets that were for like a cooling station because it actually ended up being a warm day. And what those are they're like 5 gallon buckets filled with water and ice. And then there's like a sponge in there so runners could come through and sponge themselves off or put ice down the shirts or whatever to try to cool down over the course of the day. And so this specific aid station was not in a remote location. And so we were able to kind of have a lot more food prepared than the next aid station after us, which was a remote one. I believe it was Mesquite, I think. That aid station was only had like, oh, we also had bean roll-ups, which are refried beans on tortillas rolled up, and then you cut the tortilla in half. Anyways, we had those too. Let me see what I was going to tell you. The next aid station, so we were at mile 14, I think, of the 50K and the 50 mile. And then the 50 milers were going to come back and see to the same aid station again later on at mile 36. And then for the 30K, we were like mile 5. And those were the only runners that we saw. We didn't see any of the half marathon runners, and we didn't see any of the 8K runners because their courses did not take them past our aid station. But the aid station that was next was 9 miles away. So it's kind of a long distance without any aid. And so we would encourage the runners that came through, load up here, you know, maybe take some extra food, make sure all your water and hydration and electrolytes is topped off because you've got 9 miles to go and it's a big climb from here to there. So make sure you're topped off. And so we would just kind of encourage people that way to make sure they were loaded up before they left. The other cool thing about our aid station was that there was an actual bathroom there, you know, in the park facilities were there, running water, flushing toilets, soap. And so a lot of people, they would come through and they were so happy when they saw that there was an actual bathroom at our aid station, no porta potties there. And so it was nice to see how happy people were when they realized that. And oh, so what I was saying earlier is the aid station 9 miles away from us didn't have all of the roll-ups and those kind of options. They would have more of the fruit snacks and trail mix and pretzels. They would still have the water and the Gnarly. And then they may have had some peanut butter and jelly sandwiches, possibly, but they wouldn't have had like the turkey and cheese roll-ups or anything like that, because everything that was at that aid station had to be hiked up because it was remote. And so obviously you're not going to hike up all of the ice chests and all of the, you know, things like that. So So we just encourage people to really fill up at our aid station. The cool thing about this day was my shift started at 7 a.m. and ended at 11 a.m. So I started seeing people come through, and it was so much fun because I saw several people that, well, most of them I hadn't ever met in person. Some of them I had, but they would come through and they're like, wait, you're Michelle, or you're Waddell Running Lady, or you're Waddell Lady, or, you know, maybe they wouldn't have the name exactly right, but I would say, I am, you know, what's your name? And we would talk. One girl wanted a picture. And of course, everybody at the aid station volunteering with me, they're laughing, you know, they're like, this is funny, you're famous, you know, it's just really funny. But it was awesome too, because from my perspective, whether I had met these people in person ever before or not, I felt like they were my friends. Like, you know, everybody that recognized me and said hi and gave me a fist bump or whatever, I felt like I'm invested in these people. You know, I know these people, I follow them, they follow me, we converse, we chat, or, you know, maybe they comment on my posts or whatever. It's like, I feel like I know these people and I'm rooting for them. And it was just such a, it's like a, this heartwarming, like my heart gets all like gushy and like, you know what I mean? I'm so happy to see my friends out here crushing it. And so many people that I saw. Naomi was crushing her first ever ultra marathon. I saw Bailey, and I saw, let's see, Montezuma runner. I believe his first name is Gregorio. I saw Caleb. I saw, let's see, Ashley, AZ, which is AZ Runners High, I believe is her Instagram. I just saw more, and if I didn't mention you, I'm sorry. There's just so many more people that I saw. Jeremy Miller, I saw him. Different people out there. And it was just so much fun seeing all of these people. And it was just like, I almost didn't want to leave. And I almost didn't want to like the shift to end because I was just enjoying having fun. And the everybody at the aid station that I'm volunteering with were all runners. And it's just so much fun to talk about the different AeroVipa events that they had done that I haven't done before, aid stations that they volunteered at, funny stories, you know, the year that such and such race got canceled because of lightning, and one year how the water was up to Kim's knees, and one year it was up to Elliot's ankles, and this and that, and just so much fun, you know, chatting about all these races. They were encouraging me about Lake Martin next weekend, and, you know, how they can't wait to hear about it and giving me advice. And it was just really a lot of fun. And I love volunteering. I love volunteering at these aid stations. And the cool thing is, like I already mentioned, you volunteer and you get race credits to use towards AeroVipa events. And it's just like a win-win-win situation. So once my shift was over at 11, and I got to see friends come through, and that was so much fun. But once my shift ended, I hung out for a little bit and we still chatted. And then I had to run. I had to do like a little recovery run. And the way things work, since I have switched my long runs from Saturdays to Fridays, my coach likes me to get some recovery miles in on Saturday instead. So instead of doing a big old long run on Saturday, it's much shorter. I can run anywhere from like 30 minutes to 2 hours, just depending time allowing and how I feel and all of that. And so I decided to go out and do, like, I didn't want to get on the course. Most of the courses in the park were being used for the race and for all the different distances. And I did not want to be in the way of the runners. And so there was one spot that I knew that nobody would be on. And so that was the competitive track, the competitive actual, the loop itself. And so I headed over there. There's a section that's about 5K, and I got in about an hour of running, and it was a lot of fun. And I was able to, the competitive track was also where the race headquarters were on the other side of the competitive track. So I was able to go walk over there and go look around and see, hey, who's here that I'm friends with, and go chat with a few different people. And it was a lot of fun. It was a really good day. And I didn't really want to go home, but I knew I needed to because my family was going to be home in a couple of hours. And so I went home, but it was very fulfilling. It was very awesome. It was very wonderful, and I loved it, and it was great. So if you ever get a chance to volunteer at an aid station during an ultra marathon or during a trail event, I highly recommend it because it's a lot of fun and you'll meet some really cool people. Trail runners are awesome. Whether they know you or not, they're awesome. They're nice. They're kind. And they'll have your back. So highly recommend volunteering at an aid station if you get an opportunity. And for those of you local peeps, AeroVipa has some of the best volunteer opportunities that you're going to find. So I would absolutely recommend that you go to AeroViperRunning.com and check out their volunteer tab too for upcoming events. Okay, so that's kind of my running spiel for today. But I have been thinking about, okay, so one of my friends, Karen, her Instagram handle is Karen Cupcakes. Hi, Karen. I see her at a lot of AeroViper events. But Karen had suggested something to me maybe a week ago, posted a picture on Instagram of these glowing deer eyes that I had seen when I was out running in the dark last week. And I was out on the trails and I kept hearing something in the bushes. Almost sounded like somebody was running behind me, but I was wearing a headlamp, and so I would turn around and there would be nobody there. Well, that happened probably 4 or 5 times. And, you know, we hear all the news stories about, you know, women runners disappearing and these women runners getting killed and all of this stuff. And that definitely is something that I think about when I'm out running, but not so much on the trails, because where I run on the trails, I'm in a regional park. And in order to get into this regional park, you have to pay a fee, or you have to have an annual pass, or you have to like live there, like be a camp host or whatever. You don't get through without stopping at like the guard shack at the beginning of the park. And they ask how many people are in your vehicle. So they have a count of who is in their park at all times, right? And there's a gate that closes at a certain time. There's all of these different things. And I'm not saying it's perfectly safe. I'm not going to say that, but I feel a lot safer being in a situation like that on the trails than just out, you know, kind of where everybody has access to me at any time. You know what I mean? I'm familiar with those trails and I know how far I am from my car at any given point. You know what I'm saying? And I know where I am. And so I feel comfortable being out there. So usually I'm not scared, but because of the recent news articles and all of this, I have been looking over my shoulder more, even on the trails, but especially at night. And so that's what I was doing this night. Probably about the 5th time that I turned around and scanned the trail with my headlamp and scanned the bushes and everything around me, probably about the 5th time I did that, I saw these glowing eyes. And at first I was like, "Ooh, what in the world? Is there a cryptid out there?" It was what I thought was a deer, right? Which it was. But then as I kept scanning side to side, there would another one popped up, and then another one, and then another one. It was a whole herd of deer. I mean, there were at least 5, but I think there were more, like maybe even 7 or 8. And they were just like staring at me. And so it wasn't like they were just like, "Oh no, she's scared. She's scaring us. Let's run away." No, they were like, "There's a lady on the trail. I wonder what she's doing out here. I think I'll take a bite of this cactus or whatever." You know what I'm saying? They just were staring at me. They were freaky looking. And especially it was so dark, and their eyes were just like glittering, and it was like really freaky. And so I took a picture. I couldn't help it. I posted a picture and just said how creepy it was, you know, because I kept hearing these noises and this was creepy. So Karen is like, "Hey, have you ever done an episode of like creepy stuff that's happened to you on a run?" And I said, "Well, not really. Like I wanted to, but I haven't. I do remember probably when my podcast first started that I had asked for submissions, that if anyone had ever had a creepy story to send that in. And I didn't get a lot of takers, but again, my podcast was brand new. And so I'm going to just break in here for a second and ask you, if you do have some kind of a creepy story, whether that be creepy like cryptids or seeing a scary creature or a scary person or a scary situation that happened to you on a run, whether that be like a person, whatever, you're running through a sketchy neighborhood or something happened that terrified you, ghosty or not, something scary, I would love to hear your story and I would love to read your story on my podcast. So if you have anything like that that you would want to share, please, please send me an email at funoftherunpodcast@gmail.com. Just type it up for me. If you don't want to type out your story, if it's too long and you're like, "That is way too much trouble," go to Instagram, okay? Go to my profile, Waddell Running Lady, click on message, and then in the box where you would type your text in, there is a little microphone. Push that, and you can tell me your story. You can hold that microphone button down and talk, and you can send me a voice message. And they don't let you talk forever. I don't know how long it lets you talk before you have to start it, hold it down again and take another message. But sometimes I do that. If I don't want to type a million words, I'll send voice messages through DMs on Instagram, and it works like a charm. You can do that. So I would love to hear your stories. All of this is leading me to what I want to talk about next. And these are some freaky things that have happened to me, but they don't have anything to do about running. And so I guess this is just going to be story time, so that if you're running right now, you can hear a creepy story. Okay. So this is Fun of the Run podcast. Instead of me giving you like a tip or trick right now or a creepy running story, I'm just going to give you some creepy stories that really did happen to me, and maybe they'll make your run more fun. Okay. So I think it's totally legit. Several years ago, okay, I live out on an acre of property. It used to be really rural in a part of Arizona called Waddell. It's still called Waddell, and it's still in Arizona. I still live on an acre. I'm still surrounded by people that have horses and pigs. I own goats and cats. There's guineas from the neighbors that come in my yard. There are peacocks that cross the road. Lots of coyotes, owls, goats, sheep, and every kind of animal that you can think of, okay, out here. But years and years ago, but it's also been overtaken by warehouses recently. The vegetable fields and the fields of roses that the growers would harvest, those are gone, replaced by warehouses, which is super sad. And we just have this kind of pocket of loveliness in between all of it, which I love living here, and I've been here for 20 years. But back probably about that long ago, my husband worked for a city in Arizona, and the city was about an hour away from where we lived. And every year, he would have to go away for job training. And it was typically one night where he would be gone. Sometimes it was two nights, but it usually was only once a year. And it was still in the state. So he would be sometimes 4 or 5 hours away or something like that. But he was always like too far to come home that night. So he would have to stay. That, you know, the city would put up for everybody's hotels and all of that, and their food and all of this. So I was used to this happening. This happened every year. And so this one year in specific was two nights that he was going to be gone. At the time, I had 5 children, 5 of my 6. And my husband was on this trip on his training. And I want to say my oldest was probably only maybe 12, 11, 12 at the time. And I was in bed. Everybody was asleep. All my kids were in bed. And I was in our bed, you know, in our bedroom alone, obviously. And I was sleeping in my bed. And all of a sudden, I was laying on my back. And all of a sudden, I felt somebody give my covers a tug. So like they tugged my covers. And I was like, it woke me up. And so I grabbed the covers because they were getting pulled down to the bottom of the bed. So I grabbed them and I pulled them back up to my shoulders again. And then as I'm pulling them up, they're getting pulled back down. So of course, now I'm really awake, right? And I was like, oh, and I think I might have screamed or something, right? I was like, ah. Well, I was laying on the side of the bed closest to the door in the room. And also closest to, our master bedroom has a bathroom inside the bedroom too. So that bathroom area is not separated by another door that opens and closes. There's just an archway. And so I rolled over off of my back facing that archway into the bathroom area, which is also the same way that faces our door that would exit out into the hallway. So I roll over on my back, grab my covers, and I'm trying to rationalize this. Okay. Like I don't believe in ghosts. Ghosts aren't real. I'm not, you know what I'm saying? I'm not going to even entertain the thought of this. I'm just tired, whatever. Right. So I'm full, but I'm fully awake at this time. I'm fully awake. I'm not dreaming. I'm not asleep. So I roll over. So my back is facing my husband's side of the bed. So I roll back over. My eyes are open. I'm obviously shaken. And once I kind of settled in facing the door, like I said, I felt the bed behind me, like it felt like somebody got into bed next to me and sat on the bed. And I don't remember if they laid down. I don't think I felt them lay down, but I felt a body get up on the bed. And our bed is up really high. Like you have to sit up high to get on the bed. Like you don't just like sit down to get on our bed. You kind of have to put your rear end up higher to sit on the bed. At least somebody my height does. I'm 5'7", so it's a pretty tall bed. But somebody, I felt the weight of a body get up on the bed and then sit at my back. So I was facing away from this person. It was so real that I thought, my husband is home. This whole thing has been a joke. He crawled in to the foot of the bed and pulled my covers down and he was messing with me and now he's in bed. And so I was like, wow, I can't believe that. Like he's already home. He still has another night to be away. Like something must have happened. Like they canceled the training or whatever. Right. And so I roll over like to say something and there's nobody there. And I'm reaching around the pillow because, of course, my room is dark. I think I had a light on, though, like a nightlight. But I reached around. There's nobody there. I rolled completely over. There's nothing. There's no indentation in my bed. There's nobody on the pillow next to me. There's nobody on the bed next to me. I jumped out of bed, turned my light on, and just ran back to bed, pulled the covers up to me, and just sat there staring at the room. And I was terrified. The next night, I knew I had one more night, right? I think I told my husband when he called what happened, and he's never been big into any of that stuff. He's always like, you don't think about that stuff. We don't talk about that stuff. We don't dwell on that stuff. We don't listen to those kind of stories. We don't open up ourselves to that. But this was something that really happened. So I'm not opening myself up to it. I'm telling him, these are the facts. This is what happened, right? And of course, he's like, nah, whatever, poo-pooed it, you know, and whatever. And so the next night, he still was gone. I brought all five of my children into my room with me and most of us in the bed. My two oldest boys, I think were like 10 and 11 or 11 and 12. I can't remember. I think they wanted to sleep like in sleeping bags on the floor. But the other kids, the three littlest ones, all in bed with me because I was not sleeping by myself. And I remember, and that night nothing happened. But I do remember one more detail about the first night when all of it happened. I got my laptop and I think I turned on like a game. I like playing Nancy Drew PC games. I think that's what I did because I stayed up the entire rest of the night. I didn't go back to sleep. And so I stayed on my laptop and played games because I was not sleeping in that room alone ever again. It was terrifying. Okay. Make of that what you will, but that really happened. And like I said, it was about 15 years ago. Super scary. No clue. No idea. I've never gotten any explanation. I have no idea. Okay. Fast forward about, this would have been probably about 2019. So about 5 years ago, my daughter was in college. She has a bachelor degree in civil engineering. So that's her degree. So she was almost done with her degree. All of my younger kids, my oldest had moved out. All of my younger kids were in school. Her and I were the only ones at home. And we were both sitting in the living room it was the middle of the day, like I think it was early afternoon, like around 1 p.m. She was, I think, doing homework on her laptop. And I was crocheting or I was doing something on a couch and we were opposite of each other. So we were not sitting. We were facing completely different sides of the room, but we were both in the same room and there was nobody else home. So I just want to emphasize that there was nobody else home. Okay. Nobody. My husband was at work. Kids were all at school. Her and I were the only ones there. So we're sitting there, we're not talking, we're not chatting, we're doing our own thing. I heard the sound down the hallway of somebody closing a dresser drawer. And I would think that you know what that sound is just by me saying that. The sound of somebody closing a dresser drawer, there's a distinctive sound, especially if the drawer has like a handle that has like a, I can't think of what it is, like an actual handle that kind of knocks on the wood when the drawer closes. There's a distinctive sound that a drawer closing makes. I looked up and because I was so shocked and my daughter's still sitting on the couch right across the room from me. As I look up, she's looking up, our eyes meet. And I said, did you hear that? And she said, yeah. And I said, what'd you hear? And she said, I heard a dresser drawer closing. You guys, I was like freaking, I was so thankful that I wasn't home by myself at the time. And I was so scared. I think we both got up and looked at some point, like just to make sure nobody was there because it was real. Like there was the dresser drawer closed and it wasn't like we didn't have any drawers that like were loose or that would slide open. Cause I know sometimes, you know, if there's a drawer that's not, maybe a dresser is uneven or it's on rollers or the drawer is messed up or it's loose or something, you know, a drawer can slide open. But even if the drawer slid open, it's not going to close. And we didn't have an earthquake and there was nothing, a big truck didn't drive by and rattle our house. There was nothing like that. It was just as if someone walked by the dresser and pushed the dresser drawer closed. But like I said, we looked around. Nobody was anywhere. None of the dresser drawers were open. There was nothing out of the ordinary that happened. It was just a really strange, really weird occurrence that we have no idea what that was about. I will say that this house that we live in, it was a new build. It was a spec home when we bought it. It was just a piece of dirt. And we bought it like that. We saw the plan that the builder was planning to build on the land. And it was a 5-acre piece of land that the developer had split into 5-acre parcels. And we chose one and the plan was already in motion as far as this was the house that was going to be built here. I don't know any background of what the land used to be. I believe that it was part of a palm tree farm before the land was sold and divided up and all of that. So this is not like an old house or a haunted house or something that like, you know, families and generations of people have lived in. This was a brand new house when we bought it. One more story for you. So, well, maybe two. One more, but at least one more. Let me tell you one more that happened to me personally. So actually it didn't happen to me personally. I'm lying. This happened to my son, my second oldest son. His name is Austin. He will turn 28 the day that I run Lake Martin 50 miler. So I'm going to be running on his birthday. Austin was home alone. The rest of the family had driven to Salt Lake City, Utah for Thanksgiving. No. Was this Thanksgiving? We go twice a year. We go in the summer and we go at Thanksgiving. So I don't remember if this was Thanksgiving time. I don't think so. I think this was during summer vacation. Austin had stayed behind and not gone with us. Everybody else was gone. So he was the only one in the house. He stayed behind, I believe, because he didn't get work off, something like that. He didn't take the time off of his job. And, you know, he wanted to make the money or whatever, and he would go at Thanksgiving time instead. So he's home by himself. Now, Austin was one that would like kind of lay on the couch and watch stuff on YouTube or, you know, play games on his phone and just kind of chillax, right? So that's what he was doing. And he said he was laying there and all of a sudden he felt somebody. He was laying on our couch and he felt somebody come up behind the back of the couch and just give it this huge kick right where he was laying. So as if, you know, imagine walking up behind a couch and just kicking as hard as you can into the back of the couch, like hoping you'll kick the person laying there. That's what he described it as. And so he jumped up and like, what in the world? Because nobody's home, right? What in the world? And of course, there's nobody there. Well, just as that happens. It's so crazy. Every handle, every doorknob on all of the doors that go into and out of our house started jiggling. So we have an open floor plan. So he's laying basically in the middle of this big open room, this big open area of our house. He's closest to our front door. That handle is a lever handle. And that starts shaking. Our back door is to the other side of him. That handle starts jiggling. And then there's a handle to our garage door that goes out of our next to our laundry room out into the garage. So after this huge kick in the back of the couch, then all of the door handles started jiggling. So we have a lot of lever handles on some of our doors. Our front door is a lever handle. Our back door, I don't think, is anymore. But all of the handles started jiggling at once. And he said it wasn't just like a gentle jiggle, but they all were jiggling really, really like aggressively. And he was so scared. And this is just what's really funny, because this was only a couple of years ago. This was maybe 3 years ago, 4 years ago, maybe three, I'm not sure. But he packed a bag, went to the airport, and he came to Utah. And he spent the rest of the week with us, which, if that tells you anything, that's how scared he was. So it was really, really, I mean, I thought it was hilarious in a way, but I also thought it was an absolutely terrifying story, because I can't imagine if that was me by myself, I would have done the exact same thing and I would have been terrified. And so Austin is also the one in the family that has seen the most here. So many times because he doesn't live at home anymore, but he hasn't for a few years, but he kind of did off and on for a while. He doesn't live at home anymore, but while he did live at home over the years, he would see many times, he would tell me, I would get home from whatever, and he would be like, "Mom, was anybody home today?" And I would say, "No, everybody's, you know, so-and-so's here, so-and-so's there." And he'd be like, "I saw someone come out of Gatlin's room or out of my room, whatever, and go into the girls' room." And I would say, "What?" And he's like, "Yeah, I saw someone go out of, you know," he's like, "or I would see someone go out of the girls' room and walk down the hallway." And he would just say this, and it wasn't like he would just say it off the cuff. It was like he really saw somebody go into the girl's room. It was mostly what he saw was somebody going into the girl's room. And it mostly everything he saw had to do with somebody going into the girl's room. And it was more of a kind of a shadowy person. So like not like a completely formed person, like not like a full body apparition or whatever you want to call it, would be more like a type of a shadowy blackness. And he would see that he could tell that it was the shape of a person going into our daughter's room, which both of our daughters slept in there at the time. So very weird, very strange, very creepy. And yeah, and the funny thing about that is my husband has never seen anything at this house. He's never experienced anything. And anytime we talk about it, he wants to explain it away. And most of those things you really can't explain away. The only possibility that I have thought of, this is almost more scary than it being like something paranormal or whatever, is we have an attic access in our garage. And then we have another one in our, well, I won't tell you where, but we have an attic access to where if somebody were to leave our garage open, they could potentially, where those are located, they could potentially have somebody crawl up and get into our home. You know what I mean? And there was a time when one of my kids looked up and saw that attic access looked like it had been lifted and moved a little bit, which terrified everybody. And we had to go search the whole house and make sure nobody was in our house and all this stuff. So I don't know, but that is just stuff that creeps me out. So I share those in hopes that you don't think I'm crazy, because like I said, those first couple of stories, they actually happened to me, and I'm not crazy, and I'm not like one of those like Ghostbuster people or anything. And I'm of sound mind, and I am a reasonable person, and those really happened to me. So I don't have an explanation for them. If you do, send me an explanation. I want to hear about it. Or like I said, if you have something similar, whether that has to do with running or not, share. I want to hear it. Especially if it has something to do with running. I would love to hear anything like that. And I'm going to end on that note. We ended with spooky stories today. Hopefully that gives you something interesting to listen to while you're running. Wish me luck as I run my first ever 50-mile race this weekend. I'm looking forward to an adventure. It's going to be fun. It's going to be really hard. It's going to take everything I have to finish, but I'm going to try to just take my own advice and keep putting one foot in front of the other until I see the finish line. That's what I always recommend. That's what I always tell everybody else to do. So I'm going to try to take my own advice too. I know there's going to be some lows. I know there's going to be some highs, but I feel like 50 miles is long enough to where, you know, you hit those really low places. There's time to pull yourself out if you just keep going. So I will let you know how it all goes. I will be sure to keep you all posted. Thank you for all your well wishes again. And just as a quick note, I will not be releasing a new episode on, let's see, at midnight on Monday, the 18th of March. That episode will be pushed a couple of days forward, not forward. It will be a few days later in the week, maybe Wednesday, maybe Thursday, because I want to give you a full Lake Martin recap, but I've got to fly home on Monday and my son's 14th birthday is the next day. I'd be really busy those first couple days home. And I want to have time to sit down and tell you all the nitty gritty, juicy details about Lake Martin. So look forward to another episode next week, just not on Monday like we're used to getting. Okay. Thank you again. Have fun on your run. Go out there and get them. Okay. And you've got this. Embrace your pace. Keep going. And don't let anybody stop you from chasing your dreams. I love you all. Thank you for your support always. And I hope that you will join me next week for the Fun of the Run podcast.